Now, Kevin, when you auditioned to join this show last summer, on the first day you were here, I said it was unlikely I was going to let you keep the job. because you have a deeper and better radio voice than I do.
Yeah, I don't agree, but that's nice of you to say.
Let me introduce you to Jeff Bell, who is the afternoon anchor at KCBS, our sister station, the all-new station in San Francisco. Get a load of this guy's voice. Hi, Jeff.
Well, now what am I supposed to say?
Well, no, you're stuck with the deep radio news guy voice.
Oh, man. That's me.
Jeff, the voice of God.
Jeff is in a radio news studio in San Francisco and joins us this afternoon to talk about a remarkable book that he's written called Rewind, Replay, Repeat. It is a memoir of his life with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and it is quite a read. Congratulations on the book.
Well, thanks so much, Paul, and thanks for having me on the program. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Now, as a person with OCD, did you get to proofread your own book?
You've hit the nail on the head here. You have no idea how many years it took me to sign off on that final manuscript there, you know, making sure every period was in the right place, fact-checking the heck out of the thing. So, yes, I did get to approve it.
Now, this is the sort of thing that when people hear about people who suffer from OCD, it kind of has a funny side. But for you, it's been very serious. And while you've been able to do your radio job very well, the rest of your life has been turned upside down by this disorder, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. And so much of it for me was about the covering up. I live this elaborate double life. You know, here I am on the radio talking to tens of thousands of people, you know, a fairly public figure here in Northern California. And all the time behind the scenes, you know, I'm getting stuck in bathrooms, scrubbing my hands endlessly. I'm driving my car in circles. I'm late to work because I'm picking up twigs and rocks on the sidewalk. So it was really this incredible double life for years and years.
And your bosses and your coworkers never knew.
They never knew. In fact, they've got a real kick out of reading the book now and hearing about what was going on. Our program director had no idea, for example, that during the worst of this, when I was working as a street reporter and they'd send me off to some breaking news story, because of the challenges of getting there in the news van, I'd park the news van around the block and take a taxi cab out to the breaking news story so I could get there without driving the car in circles over and over again. Needless to say, I spent more money on cab fare than I was taking in.
And you weren't putting in expense reports for those, right?
Are you kidding?
Because you couldn't let them know.
Exactly. In fact, not only was I not expensing that sort of thing, I paid thousands of dollars out of my own pocket to avoid leaving a paper trail. I mean, if anybody had told me all those years ago that I'd be talking to you and anybody else who wanted to know more about OCD publicly, I'd have never, ever believed them.
So explain this to me. Let's talk about the news van scenario that you just set up.
You
couldn't drive the news van to go cover a news story. Why? What was going on in your mind that made that an impossible task?
Okay, well, let me back up and tell you a little bit about my particular pattern, which is this. And every OCD has a root obsession, as I call it. And it's the root of every other obsession they have. Mine is, what if I unknowingly, through my negligence, somehow harm or might harm or might have harmed somebody else? It's all nonsensical. There are other people who obsess about getting germs on themselves or being hurt in some way by other people. This is my root obsession. So I have what's called a harm obsession. The compulsions I developed over the years to deal with that harm obsession range from scouring my own hands to make sure I don't have germs on them that I can give you if we shake hands, for example, to checking everything. So, for example, classic OCD harm-obsessed person drives along the street, hits a pothole with their car, thinks to themselves, I hit a pothole. I'm sure you've done that a million times, Paul. And the next step, though, as I drive down another 50 yards is, well, what if that wasn't a pothole? What if that was a body I ran over? You know, nonsensical thought. And here's the thing about OCD. Those of us who battle it are acutely and painfully aware of just how ridiculous this stuff is. But that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. You put that aside for a moment here.
So in that moment where you have that thought, you realize that it's a nonsensical thought, or does it come to you later?
No, as you're having that thought, you're thinking, well, this is ridiculous. Of course I would know if I ran somebody over. It wouldn't feel like running over a pothole. You know, the car would go up instead of going down, whatever the case might be. You know, a reasonably intelligent person can think to themselves, that is absolutely nonsensical. But the thought is so intrusive and so stuck in your head. I mean, literally stuck. We can talk more about that later. The brain scientists now have a way of actually imaging how these thoughts physically get stuck in the brain. So you've got this thought that says, well, what if that was a body? So what do you do? Well, the logical thing, you know, for any of us when we have an uncomfortable thought is to check on it. You know, make sure that's not the case. So I loop the car around and I drive around the block and I see, hey, there's a pothole right there. Okay, everything's fine. I drive on again. End of story? No. I think to myself, what if that pothole I looked at was not what was the source of this banging of my car? So I take another loop around the block, and I check this time for make sure that there's no bodies on the side of the road. And then I drive on, and I think to myself, well, how come that thought is still there that says maybe it hit somebody? I drive back again, and this time I check the bushes to make sure that the body hasn't somehow rolled or bounced over to the side of the road. So this is a classic OCD pattern where an OCD checker with harm obsessions goes around the block, around, checking to make sure everything is okay.
How were you ever able to get to work every day?
Well, there were days that, I mean, I literally just had to, you know, fight the hands on my steering wheel and say, drive the car straight, Jeff, get to work. You know, the irony, and I think you'll appreciate this, I'm sure you hear from people all the time, you know, how do you get in a room and you turn on a microphone and you talk to tens of thousands of people?
Yeah.
You know, for those of us who have done it year after year, it becomes pretty easy. You know, but people would ask me that, and I'd want to look them in the eyes and say, how do you walk down the street and not pick up the rocks and twigs? You know, it just, that was the hard part of my day. Interestingly, once I got into the studio, it was the safest place in the world for me. And it's taken me all these years to figure this out, but I think I get it now.
So when you get in the studio, do you have to organize everything in a certain way? When you finish a piece of copy, do you have to crumple it a certain way and throw it away? Are those things there, or does it disappear when you're doing your job?
For the most part, it tends to disappear, and for one reason, as you can appreciate, live radio is in the moment. And again, I think what I've come to appreciate over the years is that this has been like 5 hours of therapy a day for me, those 5 hours I'd spend in the studio, because instead of obsessing about what happened in the past and what might happen in the future, I'm forced to, you know, stick in the present moment and talk to the sports guy or do the live toss to the reporter in the field or read the copy in front of me. So in some ways, it really kept me focused on the present moment and didn't allow me to fall into that OCD trap.
Would it drive you crazy if the traffic and weather were not together?
Yes, that would disrupt everything.
It drives my producer crazy when we do that on this show. I don't think he has OCD. I think he's just, you know, used to my doing that. So I want to go back to one thing you said there about how you can't understand how other people don't pick up the rocks and twigs on the sidewalk. That's not part of the harm obsession, is it? What is that?
Oh, sure it is. What if somebody steps on that rock and slips? What if that twig bounces up and gets in the spokes of a tire or somebody riding their bicycle along there? Who am I to walk along that sidewalk and not pick those things up?
Talking with Jeff Bell, whose book is a remarkable story of his memoir of having obsessive compulsive disorder. It's called Rewind, Replay, Repeat. There's a link to it on my website, harrisonline.com. There are people who, of course, hear you talking about this and say, well, that guy's nuts.
Absolutely.
Is this a mental health problem?
Oh, absolutely. It is a mental health problem, but also, interestingly, the brain scientists are now seeing what a physiological problem it is. I'm not a brain scientist, and I probably will get this wrong, but I think it's the caudate nucleus, the transmission box of your brain. And for those of us with OCD, there is a problem with that caudate nucleus. And the thoughts literally get stuck. It's a neurotransmission problem. So, you know, we get these thoughts lodged in our head, and our brain, trying to do something constructive, comes up with ways to try to dislodge that thought. Hence the compulsions. And of course, it's the classic dog chasing its tail. And so the more that you follow this pattern, the more you reinforce it, and the more you get caught in it.
And is there a pharmaceutical answer to this?
There is. Medications have proven to be fairly effective in treating OCD, but not without therapy. It's usually a combination of the two. There's something called cognitive behavioral therapy, and it's not fun, which is one of the reasons that medication is often a part of the whole process, because it can take the edge off biologically with those thoughts and loosen them up, if you will, a little bit. But the process itself, in terms of the CBT, the cognitive behavioral therapy, is basically learning to reframe the thoughts and the actions. For example, there is something called emotional reasoning, and all of us go through that. You know, if you're driving along and the car rattles, it sets off an emotion to you which says problem, you know, danger, something happened. But for me, that emotion stays stuck along with the thought. So even as I go back and check these things, because I can't dislodge the emotion, it feels very, very real.
How old were you when you started having this problem?
My earliest memories are of OCD patterns, mental checking, which was, you know, hence the title of the book, Rewind, Replay, Repeat. That's about the mental checking that goes along with the physical checking, which is thinking through in my head the most mundane aspects of my life. So when I get to work after finally prying myself away from that scene of checking the pothole over and over again, the story does not end there in terms of the checking. I can't physically check anymore, but I can replay in my head a virtual audio and video, if you will, of what I remember seeing and hearing as I drove through that stretch. Hmm. My earliest childhood memories are of lying awake in bed at night and just rethinking things over and over again from my day. Who was that kid who yelled hi to me? What was this about? What was that about? Just this need for certainty. Earliest memories, again, 7 or 8 years old, perhaps 5 or 6 years old, actually.
And when this was manifesting itself, could you go to your parents and could they possibly understand what was going on inside your 7 or 8 year old brain?
No. And for a couple of reasons. One, 40 years ago, there just wasn't this dialogue that we have now about disorders like OCD. So my parents just thought I was a classic worrier. I mean, the joke in our family was Jeff gets worried when he has nothing to worry about. So, I mean, I think I frustrated the heck out of them because, you know, I'd say to Mom, who was this kid yelling hi to me? And she'd say, well, why do you need to know? And I couldn't articulate it. I couldn't say why I needed to know, but I did need to know. I mean, to the point where I couldn't sleep for days on end. Now, interestingly, like a lot of obsessive compulsives, my disorder lay dormant for a whole bunch of years. High school, college, I mean, well, I call those my normal years. And then it hit with a vengeance in my late 20s with the full adult OCD form.
Now, this is interesting to me. I'm going to take a commercial break here in just a moment here. And if you were doing that on your show, everything would be okay. But is it going to be odd for you when we take a break on my show and you've got to sit in that studio for 4 or 5 minutes? Are you then going to be rewinding, replaying, and repeating our 15-minute conversation thus far before we come back for the second half?
Oh, you're on to me. I might even wash my hands.
Seriously?
No. I'm kidding about that, but yeah, I'll think through what we just talked about, and did I get it right? Did I give out any bad information?
I was looking through the book, Jeff. You talk about your wife and your two kids. How did your OCD work when you were dating?
Oh, man. You know, the interesting thing there, Paul, is I was a really carefree guy back in those days. And I, you know, like to say that my wife didn't really get what she signed up for with me because back in those college days, they fell in my quote-unquote normal years. And she had no idea what she was getting in for. And I'll tell you, her new nickname these days is Saint Sam. Her name is Samantha. And she, the first thing everyone tells me after they read the book is, your wife is a saint. I mean, she hung in there with me through thick and thin. She ran our family single-handedly when I was all but unable to leave the house, and I'm a really lucky guy.
Yeah, to have somebody who will do that for you. Were you literally unable to go out?
Yeah, I mean, at one point I gave up driving. That just became too difficult because of what I described for you in terms of having to drive the car in circles. And then I had this whole thing about harming people that was getting out of control, especially around kids and the elderly and the homeless, those I deemed to be especially vulnerable. And so, you know, as a father of a couple of kids, could I go to Chuck E. Cheese? No way. Could I go to their schools? Only under very careful circumstances where I was certain I wouldn't bump into another kid. I mean, life just got really dark and really complicated.
Have your kids shown any signs of OCD?
I've been pretty fortunate, and we have collectively as a family. But it is very common that this does run in families. In fact, scientists are getting pretty close to isolating an OCD gene. They found a family of genes that they're fairly certain comprises this gene somehow or another.
Let me include some phone calls, 314-436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. First, my colleague Carol Daniel has a question for you.
Sure.
I can't help but wonder about your loneliness, because to have something like this, and you kept it from everybody, were you lonely at times?
Yeah, it's a great question, Carol. And you know, I'll tell you, the moment I stopped being lonely was the moment I realized what was going on. Now, imagine going through everything I've described for you, and I guarantee you there are people listening right now that can relate to what I'm talking about that until this moment had no idea that there's a name for this thing. And that's where I was for most of my life, certainly those stretches as a kid and early adulthood, when I thought I was literally crazy. Mm. I have a very close friend who's now in her 70s, and she thought she was possessed by the devil for 50 years because she had no way of explaining these crazy thoughts and actions. And that is very lonely because you can't share that with anybody. For me, the aha moment was, I was on my second therapist. I had been misdiagnosed twice. I'm in a bookstore going through the psychology section. The investigative reporter in me is taking over, saying there's got to be an explanation here. And I find a book called The Boy Who Couldn't Stop Washing. And, you know, as you can imagine, that title jumps out at me. I pick up the book, and for the very first time, I realize that there is a name for this thing. And more importantly, that there's a treatment process. And, I mean, I got to be honest, I just broke down in hysterics at this bookstore because, I mean, that was really powerful stuff.
Let me include some phone calls here. Ted, you're on the Paul Harris Show on KMOX. Say hi to Jeff.
Hi, Mr. Bell. I wanted to know if there are thousands of manifestations of OCD, or is it fairly common that we all go through the same sort of thing? Like when I was growing up, my worst nightmare was a digital clock.
Okay.
There were certain numbers that I couldn't get off of.
Right.
And I had to do things until another good number popped up. And I just wanted to know if you found that that's common, or do we all go through the same thing, or can it just manifest itself in a million different ways?
Great question, Ted. I'm really glad you asked it because I hadn't covered that at all. And there are so many different flavors, if you will, of OCD. And on the surface, they seem like they're very different. But if you break it down, they really are exactly the same cycle. There are OCD washers and OCD checkers. I've described both of those. I deal with both of those issues. There are repeaters. And you, what you've described there tends to fall under that umbrella, the OCD repeating, where you have to do things perhaps in sets of three or sets of four, or numbers become very important to you. There are also OCD hoarders. There are orderers who have to have everything lined up in a particular order, for example. And at the root of this is really the same issue. There is a what-if thought. There is an obsession that pops into your mind at some point. And for my friend, for example, who is an OCD orderer and a repeater, she can happen to be walking through a doorway and a nonsensical thought crosses her mind, like, you know, what if this plane crashes? And in her mind, the only way to quote unquote clear that thought is to pass through that doorway exactly three times. So the cycle is the same. There's an obsession and there's some kind of a ritual that she performs to try to ward off that horrible thought.
All right, Ted, thanks for calling. 314-436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120, and my email, paulharris@kmox.com. J.D., you're on KMOX. Hi.
Hi, Jeff and Paul. Jeff, I think rather than hurting a lot of folks in the past, you've actually are helping a lot of people right now just by unpacking this disorder in a very clear way. But my question has to do with any pharmacology that you may have tried or not tried, and if that would have been a component in the in a sooner recovery or treatment of this.
Thanks, J.D., for your comments. I appreciate that. I have been on and off medications for a number of years. And interestingly, I think like a lot of obsessive compulsives, I really fought the notion of taking medication for this disorder. OCD is all about control and lack thereof. And there was this feeling for years for me that if I got on medication, it was going to take away my control. It was going to make me somebody I wasn't. The irony is I look back on it now, and I should tell you, I continue to take a low dosage of medication that helps with the physiology and helps with dislodging some of these thoughts. And as I look back now, I think, oh, what was I trying to protect? I mean, I wanted to make sure that I stayed that person who was walking the sidewalks and picking up the twigs and driving the cars in circle and avoiding my kids. On the contrary, the medication really helped me get back control of my life by allowing me to do the hard work I needed through therapy and to start putting things back together again. The one caveat I like to put out all the time when I'm talking about medication is, I personally believe, and I'm not a doctor, but I personally believe that the medication without the hard work of the CBT, the cognitive behavioral therapy, is too much of like a bandage. I mean, that if you take the medication away, you haven't learned the life skills in terms of dealing with the disorder. So I advocate doing both.
All right, JD, thanks for calling. Is yours extreme OCD?
Yeah, it's a continuum, and from everything I've gathered, I got the full dosage of this disorder. Yeah.
Now, we've seen characterizations of people with extreme OCD. Jack Nicholson's character in As Good As It Gets. Tony Shalhoub, of course, in the TV show Monk.
Great show.
So you can watch that show and not be upset by what you're seeing?
Absolutely. I mean, if there's one thing, in fact, one of the questions I get most often is it okay to laugh? In fact, to digress for just a quick moment here, Paul, my boss, one of my bosses here at CBS, came into the studio about a week or so after I had given him a copy of the book to read, and he had this sheepish look on his face, and I was scared to death because I was thinking he was going to say, wait a minute, we can't go public with this, or whatever the case was going to be. And he put his head down, and he said, Jeff, I have a question for you. And I said, okay. He said, is it okay to laugh? Because this is the funniest thing I've read in a long time.
Hmm.
And I said, absolutely. In fact, for those of us who battle this disorder, the perspective that we gain by finding the humor in the nonsensical nature of this thing is so powerful. So, yeah, it's okay to laugh. I think Monk is a wonderful show. And I think that for the most part, they actually capture a lot of the subtle pain that's associated with this as well.
Now, I got to ask you kind of an inside baseball question here.
Sure.
Because you and I have both been in radio for a long time, you are now working at one of the premier radio stations in the Bay Area, doing afternoons on an all-news station. KCBS in San Francisco is one of those places where a lot of people in this business, if they're in the news, radio business, they would kill to get that job.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you started out at smaller radio stations in other cities, and you had to put together audition tapes. How do you do that with OCD?
You're asking some great questions, Paul. Well, let me tell you this. The name of the book was originally called Air Checks, which would mean something to you, but as my publisher pointed out, wouldn't mean a lot to a lot of people out there. And the reason it was called Air Checks is because, as I confess in the book, I figured out that I've been behind a microphone for about 8,000 hours over my 18 years in radio.
Rookie.
Yeah, exactly. But I have recorded just about every one of those hours. And the reason was, and you can connect these dots pretty quickly, in case there was an issue I had after I got off the air with what I said or what commercials I played, I could go back and physically replay them. What I couldn't do in my head, I could physically replay these things.
See, we actually have a system here at KMOX where our show is actually being destroyed while we're doing it.
We try
to keep no record of this whatsoever. My lawyer advised me to do it that way. But go ahead.
So you know where I'm coming from with this. And I got to tell you, at my worst, I would finish up a three-hour shift. I was at KFBK in Sacramento for about 9 years during the worst of all this. And during those years, I became obsessed with making sure that I really played all the commercials. Now, you probably have a log in front of you there, Paul, that you follow, and, you know, you play Sears at 210 and whatever, Big O Tires at 310. I went through, and of course, like any of us, as an operator of the program, I would check off that these spots aired. But after the fact, I would start questioning, did they really air? You know, what if I didn't play this commercial? I'm cheating and hence harming the advertiser. So I would go back and replay my air checks to make sure that I really played these things. And it was just ridiculous. I'd spend hours doing this. So to get back to your question, I certainly had lots and lots of tape to use for my auditions. But of course, as you were getting at, you know, trying to find the right pieces, well, that took, you know, days and weeks.
Yeah, because an audition tape is usually 5, 8, maybe 10 minutes long. And to winnow that down with OCD.
Oh, yeah.
Must have just been so aggravating to you. But at the same time, you know, if the OCD is something that you are still not fully aware of how you can get over, it's kind of how you lived your life.
Yep.
I mean, that must have been a certain point where you just said, okay, well, this is who I am. This is what I do. Yeah, I'm the guy that drives around the block 11 times, and I got to check the garage door 14 times, and yep, I got to go wash my hands now. You just must have come to a point where you said, well, that's who I am, and that's who I'm always going to be.
Yeah, and in fact, at its worst, Paul, that was the equivalent for me of just giving up, which was, you know what? Okay, fine. I'm going to be this person. If I don't leave my house, so what? Let my wife take care of things. And that was a really deep, dark, bad place to be. And that was the low point for me, was thinking I had to accept this. And one of the reasons, in fact, the main reason I wanted to write the book when I got better here, was to share the message that, you know what, it doesn't have to be like that. You know, the goal with OCD, as far as I'm concerned, is not to get rid of this disorder. It's a brain disorder. I can't make it go away. But I can learn to live with it. I can learn to manage it. You know, and here's a guy who ostensibly is doing okay for himself. I mean, I am working at one of the premier radio stations in the country. I have a wonderful wife and kids at home. And I have found a way to live with this disorder that, you know, potentially could have destroyed my life.
All right, one last question for you from my buddy Kevin Wheeler.
Jeff, yep. I was going to ask you if there's a harmless version of this, because I have a friend who also happens to be in radio, very successful, but He has to get up and wash his hands at every commercial break. And I've been telling him for years, and that's not the only thing that he has. He says, oh, that's no big deal. I'm just cleaner than usual. It's harmless. Is there a harmless version of OCD?
Well, Kevin, one of the interesting things about this disorder, and I think the reason that this book is kind of finding a wider audience than I ever imagined, is that from what I understand, just about everybody has a touch of this thing here. I mean, it's a continuum. I like to, you know, start my talks sometimes at bookstores asking the audience to raise their hand if they have in the past 6 months gone back to double check that they closed their garage door. And almost to a person, everybody raises their hand. And then I ask them, okay, once you went back and checked and drove away, did you go back and check it again? And then they look at me like I'm nuts. So, you know, I mean, there is that distinction. So, yeah, I mean, it's quite possible that your buddy just has this issue with wanting to have his hands real clean. The test, if you will, a non-clinical test for whether or not you really are truly obsessive compulsive would be, to what degree would it be painful for you if you didn't go wash your hands during that break? And to what degree does this get in the way of your life? You know, so if you couldn't do the show without going and washing your hands, you couldn't come back for that next segment, well, that's a problem. So, you know, it becomes a matter of degree.
Jeff, this is fascinating stuff. My producer and my engineer are obsessively giving me that look that says we got to go away. So congratulations on the book. It's called Rewind, Replay, Repeat, a memoir of obsessive compulsive disorder. There's a link to it right now on my website, harrisonline.com. Jeff Bell from KCBS in San Francisco, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me. I very much appreciate it.
It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.